The 30th gene key. The transformational path of the 30th gene key moves from desire to rapture. It's the path of lightness. Well, here we have one of the juiciest of pathways, of ways, of the 64 ways, and of the gene keys in the whole matrix. The 30th shadow of desire. And it says something about all the shadow states, I think. That each shadow lends its teaching to the whole. And every shadow is rooted in unfulfilled longing or desire. And every shadow is a pattern that emerges out of this unfulfillment in an attempt to try and fix it or do something about it. And desire, obviously, is a component of being human. So you can let go of thinking that you don't have desires, or if you don't have this gene key, you know, you're never going to get over desire. No, that kind of thinking doesn't last long when you come deeper into the gene keys. And the gene keys in your profile simply show you a pattern that you can follow that will help you transform these shadows into the gifts that lie hiding inside them. So desire can be many things, and it can take so many forms. However, no matter which form it takes, it has this single similarity, that it's a projection that's moving from the center outwards. It's a seeking, a request, a leaning outwards, whether through our heart, our mind, or our body, or all three. It's a longing, an ache, a yearning for something that we feel we are lacking. So if desire is because of a lack we feel, then what's the most fundamental lack? If we can find the deepest source of our desire, then we have the best chance of understanding it. Is it the desire to feel whole? To be somehow complete? Is it the desire to know who we are or what we are? Is it a genetic imperative to bond and evolve? Is it the desire for freedom? The desire perhaps to be free from suffering? The desire to find peace? Perhaps it's all these things. But in its purest sense, I think we can just accept it as a state of longing that's built into the machine. It comes with the body, but it doesn't come with an instruction manual. I was in the supermarket yesterday at the self-service counter. You know how most supermarkets have that now. And I was scanning the items. And as I was doing so, I kind of rested my hand on the counter. And the machine suddenly spoke to me and said, you wouldn't believe what it said. It said, unexpected item in the bagging area. And I looked down and it was my hand. And this is the problem with desire. It happens so unexpectedly. We see something and we want it. And we weren't looking for it, but suddenly there's the desire. And when we look really deeply into the situation, it was actually us, not the object of our desire. It was our hand all along. And so we get hooked by the temptations of the world, of the senses. And here we have the dilemma, temptation. You know, I can resist everything except temptation. That's what Oscar Wilde said. And it's true. Temptation is a tough cookie. The more you try and resist it, the more powerful it becomes. Every gene key is a path. We have to remember this. It's a way. And these are ways through transformation. So the 30th gene key, this is the way of desire. You have to give in to temptation. You have to yield to it in order to transcend it. Now, I know this is very dangerous talk, and I have no wish to be sued by anyone now or in the future. So what I'll say is that this is just all fuel for contemplation. And if you have the 30th gene key in your profile, or if you're drawn to it, then you need to contemplate desire and temptation. You really need to watch it and learn from it and grow through it. It's just a lens. Not everyone has this as a lens. So when I say yield to temptation, I don't mean it literally. I mean trust in it, but you don't have to act on it. You know, desires are all from the source, but that doesn't mean we have to act out every one that comes along. That's the root of selfishness. And you have to see that desires are not the enemy. They're guests. They come, they go. The contemplative approach is very generous. It allows things in. It invites in the guests. It listens to them. It gives them space to stay or to leave. It observes. And sometimes the desire does indeed get played out externally, but also sometimes the desire simply falls away and returns back to the nothingness. And the wider your awareness becomes, the more room you give desires. And above all, we're here to learn from them. So the biggest problem with desire is in the mind, because the mind can get hold of a desire and blow it out of all proportion. You know, the mind can fan a desire as a wind fans a flame. So be especially vigilant as far as concerns your mind and desire. There's a great difference between a desire and a need. The body has needs, such as food. And desire is a craving for something that we don't really need. So Buddha, for example, suggests honouring needs but lessening desires. And if you really watch your mind carefully, you'll see that it's the mind that's always the culprit. Without your mind, there'd be no desire that lasts. And that's something to consider and to contemplate. The 30th gift, lightness. The gift of lightness. You're blessed if you have this gift. Following desire and giving into temptation, it's so deeply human and so deeply humbling if you're on a spiritual path. Or whether you're not, it is. Desires come and go in cycles. So you can have a period in which you feel quite calm and things seem to be going rather well, and then all of a sudden a cycle of desire springs up unexpectedly. And how we deal with such times dictates the flow of our destiny. I'm no expert in this, please understand that. I'm as influenced by desires as anyone. But the thing I've learned about desire is that, although it's not bad, if you constantly follow your desires without restraint, you often end up feeling bad. And part of that may be guilt, which comes as a deep self-judgment. And part of it is actually the chemistry of desire. You fulfill it and then you're empty. You know, desire is a fire in the body. In the 30th Jin Ki, this hexagram, it's famously called the clinging fire. So when you entertain desire, it inflames and engulfs your lower bodies, your physical, emotional, and mental bodies. So if you've been doing refined spiritual practice, for example, and then you give in to a deep desire, it tends to really lower the frequency of your being. And again, this isn't bad, it's just part of our path. The 30th Jin Ki, along with the 13th Jin Ki, they form the codon ring called the Ring of Purification. And there you have it, the purpose, the real purpose of desire. It's here to purify us. But desire in itself obviously doesn't purify us. It reminds us that there are higher dimensions by standing in the way of those dimensions. So there's a process of purification in this gift. And it's called the gift of lightness, because that's the quality that you need to begin transcending and transmuting desire. We rise and we fall in life. Sometimes we're flying and sometimes we're dragging. The thing is, you have to see that desire isn't unholy. There is no holy and there's no unholy. And that's what creates heaviness and guilt. Lightness is when you can look at desire with equanimity. So if you follow a desire into the world and then realize that it's not fulfilled you, and in fact you've lost something through following it, then that is not something to worry about. You just have to see that it was a part of your journey and you needed it. You needed to be reminded. And lightness is that reminder. It's the field that lies behind desire. It's generous, it's accepting, it appreciates the juiciness of desire, and it also sees the futility of it. So as we embrace the gift of lightness, we become less caught up in the desire game. We begin to purify our nature by releasing ourselves from the mind's influence. And then the desires emerge, but are simply fuel, and our awareness begins to refine that fuel. And as it becomes refined, it becomes higher fuel, like rocket fuel. It's a higher version. And instead of feeding our lower bodies, it begins to feed and fuel our higher, more subtle bodies. And this is alchemy. And we begin to feel lighter. We're able to release the guilt around temptation, and we can begin to use desire to serve a higher goal and a higher purpose. So the gift of lightness comes on gradually. It may even take lifetimes. If you come in with this gift, then it means you have deep work to do in this area. You have to understand and transmute your desires. That's work that leads to an interesting and colourful life. So you'll likely need a good dose of self-forgiveness and compassion. And you'll need to learn the gift of lightness. And you will learn it. And it may take a while, but over time you will feel lighter. And you will be able to see the futility of desire and the beauty of desire. And then you can be more refined in how you approach desire. It won't rack your body. It won't steal all your energy and make you feel depressed or frustrated or guilty. Purity, you know, it's not what people think. Purification is about seeing that you already are a pure soul. It's about self-forgiveness. It's also about being responsible for your own behavior and its consequences. Following a desire to its conclusion, it may cause others a great deal of pain, and this will create a wave of crisis in your life. And you then have to process all that and see deeper into yourself. And it can be a revelation. And I can't say it's an easy process. I've personally found it one of the greatest challenges of my life. I suspect many of you are the same. But there are great gifts that come from it. We do eventually feel a lift from this gift of lightness. And we begin to realize that what the Buddha said is good advice. Simply to lessen the influence of desire in your life. We don't and we shouldn't try and do it all at once. It's just a long-term goal. And gradually, over time, we feel the lightness coming. And it begins to lift us up onto another plane. And from there, we begin to be able to really serve and really create something of enduring value. The 30th city, rapture. And of course, we know where this is all heading. You know, to one of my favorite words for the enlightened states of all the 64 cities, rapture. The 30th jinki is paired with the 29th jinki, which is really a great story. So at the shadow level, we have desire and half-heartedness. And so often we begin something and then desire sways off course and we lose momentum and we stay half-hearted. And many people in half-hearted relationships we see, and we see half-hearted jobs, and all because their desire just keeps pulling them out towards something else, something new, something with the promise of fulfillment. And then we have the gifts, commitment and lightness, 29 and 30. How light you feel when you know you're committed and you know you can stay the course, even amidst the desire field, that's empowerment. And then finally we have devotion and rapture. What a pairing! But you know it's a vital pairing. Rapture can't exist without devotion. Rapture comes when all your desires have been purified into a single overarching desire. The desire to return to your source. The yearning for the light, for freedom from suffering. And this is, after all, what all our desires really are. The desire to be free from suffering. The desire for God. You know, sometimes I just have to use the G word. I mean, let's just be honest. You're here listening to this because you're seeking God. You're seeking the source. You're yearning for that source. The Sufis are very good in this area. They know all about the clinging fire. They know all about devotion. They say simply, just become your longing. To realize how deep it goes and then let it burn you and burn you until you're on fire with it. And you can choose an external figure if you wish. It can be your lover, your guru, your god. It can be any deity. And the figure becomes the symbol of your longing, and you pour that longing into the symbol. And maybe it's because the Sufis came out of the deserts, out of the fire and the heat. Maybe that's why the Sufis and the Arabic cultures resonate so much with this particular city. And rapture, it's to become possessed by your longing, your love. It's to become drunk with it. It's to let it burn you clean. You offer up your every desire to God or to the guru, and you see everything that captivates your desire as a mirror of the one you seek. And because you offer it up, because you forego it on the external plane, the fuel elevates your consciousness. One of my favorite rapture artists was Ramakrishna, who lived in India in the 20th century, and one of his disciples took the great trouble to write down fervently everything he said, at least when he was present, and to describe in detail his conversations and his actions with his devotees. And Ramakrishna, you know, he was so on fire. He'd be in the middle of a philosophical conversation and someone would just speak a sentence like, Krishna was so devotional. And Ramakrishna would just get hooked by it, and he'd instantly get swallowed by his own samadhi, by his rapture. and he'd be transported into another world. And it might take an hour or more before he kind of came back to reality and then he could resume the conversation. Can you imagine that? It's good to imagine these things. The more we do so, the more attuned we become to such energies. It's like my series I do on the ecstatics, when I pick these extraordinary people from history and then I explore their consciousness. And I get so high from doing that. That's actually a spiritual practice. Anything that gets us high like that is a good preparation. And of course, we also have to function in the physical world. But I recommend anyone or anything that transports you naturally into higher states. I often think of a woman who came to one of my Venus courses a long time ago. And she was, and she still is, an influential woman, a powerful woman. And I remember that she has these codes, the 29 and the 30, these two gene keys, and they're in a very prominent place in her profile. And for 4 days during that course, she resisted what I was saying. She fought against the transmission. But on the fifth and the final day, unexpectedly, it's always unexpected, she cracked. And her heart just peeled open and the tears came. And in place of this impressive, dignified, but closed exterior, came forth a woman of sensual wonder and open-hearted, devotional depth. She was a child and a great-grandmother, all in one and all the ones in between. She was a courtesan and a nun, a wild lover and a devoted wife, all in one package. And the power of her love embraced all paradoxes. And I remember feeling it vibrating in the air around her, the rapture. And however it happened, she returned to the world and her heart kind of closed off again and she became that important, respectable person. And I often wonder how that sits inside her. And I wonder what it takes to hold that kind of love underwater for so long. And I can't judge it, because I've known it too, my heart closing down for one reason or another. But honestly, just ask yourself, what reason is there that you can possibly justify for closing your heart? And look at your life and realize that everyone around you is God in a disguise. And they're all here to teach us, to remind us that beneath our veneer, we one rippling field of love, of divine rapture. And to let that in is our highest purpose. We need a new wave of ecstatics in the modern world. The materialists, they need to be challenged. They need to be taken on. I don't wish them ill. I wish them to awaken like that woman so that they can embrace each other, so that we can repair the world, so that we can all be unified in the rapture. I wrote this prayer shortly after doing this jinky. It's called the Supplication of Divine Rapture. Shatter my heart, O rapturous God. Crush me in the infinite softness of your embrace. Lead me gently to the sacred shore and hurl me into your glittering depths. Let the sword of my longing pierce the rough hide of the great illusion, and may the blood of my life pour out into the sea of eternal creation. By your holy grace, may the red Buddha sweep me clean, leaving me stainless, pristine as diamond, empty and silent as the spotless sky. O most serene lady of limitless bliss, I court divine annihilation in your arms. Pulverize my soul into luminescent dust and scatter my dreams among the stars. I bow to your thrust, to the divine rapture that swells and wells in my breast as you carve and shape my yearning soul in the immortal fires of the fervor of God. I bow to your thrust, to the divine rapture that swells and wells in my breast as you carve and shape my yearning soul in the immortal fires of the fervor of God.